percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious.
And it's that time.
Yeah.
Time for coffee. And a little bit of fun stuff in the news. These are the things that made the headlines but didn't. Okay, they didn't. They missed mainstream headlines, so believe me, this is the stuff I live for. Plan B, our planet, has been located. Yes, we're going. And this is the fun thing. Earth-sized planet, 4.2 light years away. Realm of possibility here. Pale blue dot, meet pale red dot. Proxima B. And they're describing it in the journal Nature. When I saw this, they were making an announcement saying, it's going to come out, they're going to publish it. It's there, really. I was like, okay, where is it? Nature. 4 months after the announcement of the Breakthrough Starshot, this is an initiative to build and send tiny spacecraft to the nearest star system. It's now got a target. Pete Warden, Breakthrough Starshot's executive director and the former head of NASA's Ames Research Center, says, quote, we are really excited, and to use the U.S. term, pumped, about this discovery. We're on our way. Well, somebody's on their way. But there you go. So this is a big deal, and making all things UFO much more interesting. Because it means if they're there, then they may have a really good shot of seeing us, and there's probably more out there closer than we have managed to find just yet. So, and animals in the news, I like this because with the politics being so front and center, we also have our own version of Animal Planet being promoted, and one of them is Sir Niels Olav, the penguin, Edinburgh Zoo. Now, Niels Olav, Mr. Penguin, is an honorary member of the King of Norway's Guard, and he inspects the soldiers when they arrive and they visit the Scottish capital. He was knighted in 2008, and he now has his new title, Brigadier. Is that right? Brigadier. Anyway. He's a very decorated penguin and very lucky that he lives in such a cool place. All right. Dog elected mayor. This is in the USA. Cormorant, Minnesota. Again, Duke. Duke is apparently super popular, winning landmark again. So his secret, probably because he's a dog. Who doesn't love dogs? They held the weekend vote and he won his third consecutive term as mayor. Voters paid, now this is a good part, $1 each to cast their ballots held during the annual Cormorant Days, D-A-Z-E, festival. So there you go. Oh, everyone except, there was one vote. Somebody else voted for his girlfriend Lassie. Well, there you go. She probably cast a ballot for herself. You wonder about that? Okay. Now, this is a cool, interesting story. Catholic Church was contacted after the police had no clue what to do about this home in Scotland. They had disturbing incidents and reports of poltergeists at the family home. This is on online, the Daily Record. They finally said, okay, we don't know what's happening. We can't do anything about it. They expected this to be kind of a mental health issue when they showed up. They said they saw lights going off, clothes flying across the room, and the dog, the family's pet chihuahua, sitting on top of a hedge. That, I don't know the details, but they did call the Catholic Church, and they were notified, and they said that we've got guys on the force here 20 years. We have no clue. They're just shaking their heads going, what the heck? I'm going to put this stuff on wendyscoffeehouse.com. So if you miss it, you can go see the links. Worth it. Just check it out. And then we've got, let me see here. Oh, I forgot. There's another factor in this story. There's a guy who's a medium, Scottish medium. He and his wife want to go in there and find out what's going on. He says usually he solves cases in 2 days. All right. So he thinks it'll be just overnight stay and he'll figure out what's going on. Officers, however, are continuing to look into the police history or the history basically in general of the property to see if there's anything that can explain the events. But they do have one medium ready to pack their bags and go and spend the night. No, thank you. Been there, done that. No. Okay. This is my guest coming up. We'll do that in just a minute. John Perkins, author of New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. If you did not miss or catch this the first time around, this is an explosive book the first time around. The second time around, he's added more. What we're also going to talk about is The World as You Dream It, because that's more of a, that's the upside. That's what he got into before he really got into the details and the dirt. But one last little news item of the week. I loved it. This is a UFO sighting in New York. You might know Rowan Blanchard. She's Girl Meets World star. Okay. She visited New York City, and she was sharing a picture that she took of the sky. It has a little object up in the right-hand corner. Okay? And she says, say what you will, but that thing was just appearing in the photo and wasn't physically there. All right? So there is a question about what was going on with that. And normally, according to the little pundits here, you would say, yeah, it's just a light trick, it's all that. And this is, really does like a, it's a cool-looking photo. But the deal is, this is the same day John Lennon's UFO sighting happened, 42 years ago. There you go. Let's hear from Mr. Lennon. Do we got that?
Up there, I saw a UFO, and it went down the river, turned right at the United Nations, turned left, and then down the river. It wasn't a helicopter, it wasn't a balloon, and it was so near. Had white lights, just looked like light bulbs, you know? Just going off, on, off, on, off, on, blink, 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 round the bottom, and on top was a red light.
Coming up next, it's John Perkins, The World as You Dream It, Tales of an Economic Hitman, Take Two. Amazing. Stick around for this. You're going to be surprised. It's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call. You betcha. My guest, John Perkins, Tales of an Economic Hitman 2. And the first time around, I interviewed, what was it, mid-90s, I think, interviewed him for The World as You Dream It, the shamanic teachings from the Amazon and Andes. And then I found out later on that the real story that he had that he waited on and did the New Age circuit because he was waiting and sitting on this story is a bombshell. And I just, one of these things, when you know talk about conspiracy series theories and all that, this is the real thing. If you really want to know what's been going on behind the scenes, John Perkins is your guy. And John, I did a little research in addition to the books and stuff and found out there are people who had dealings with you back at that time when you were an economic hitman, and they don't have nice things to say. You're not surprised, are you?
No. Well, yeah, I'm totally surprised. Why would they say anything mean about me?
Okay, background, please. What is an economic hitman, and what happened?
Well, I think it's fair to say that economic hitmen have really created the world's first truly global empire. And it's actually not really an American empire. It's a corporate empire, although the U.S. government, the Pentagon, the Secret Services, the Intelligence Services, whatever you want to call them, certainly support it. It's really a global corporate empire. And, the way I work, the way economic hitmen work, is that basically we will identify countries with resources corporations want, like oil, and then arrange huge loans to that country or those countries from the World Bank and sister organizations. That money does not ever go to the country, though. It's on the country. It's on the balance sheet. The country owes the money, but the money actually goes to our own corporations, the Bechtels and Halliburtons and Stone and Webster's, to build big infrastructure projects in that country, things like power plants and industrial parks, highways that benefit, first of all, our own corporations that make huge profits off this, and secondly, the wealthy families in those countries that own the industries and the commercial establishments that benefit from electricity and cars and highways and industrial parks. But the majority of the people suffer because money is diverted from education and healthcare and other social services to try to pay off the interest on these loans. In the end, the principal is never paid off. And so we go back, usually in the guise of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and say, hey, since you can't pay your debts, sell your resources real cheap to our corporations without any environmental or social regulations. Privatize, sell off your electric utilities, your water and sewage system, your schools, your jails, all your public sector businesses to our corporations cheap. And that's really been creating this huge global corporate empire. Oh, yes, and by the way, if the leaders of the countries don't play this game, if they don't go along with this, and let's remember, they and their families benefit because they own the industries and many other ways they benefit, which I go into in detail if you want, but they benefit. But if they decide that they have integrity, that they don't want to put their countries in this position, then we threaten them, and they know that the jackals will go in, and these are people who either overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. Two of my clients, Jaime Roldós, democratically elected president of Ecuador, and also Omar Torrijos, the head of state of Panama, both refused to play the game and were both assassinated. And Wendy, you mentioned the idea of conspiracy theories. I'm not a conspiracy theorist at all. I don't believe in some overarching Dr. No type of person or organization that runs everything. But I guess I'd say I'm a conspiracy factualist. You know, if you look at the CIA's own website, if you read the Panama Papers and the WikiLeaks and Snowden, again, the CIA's own website where they admit to being deeply involved in the overthrow and the killing of Salvador Allende of Chile and Arbenz of Guatemala and Mossadegh of Iran, the Mumba of the Congo, of Diem of Vietnam. We've admitted to our country's admitted to these things. These are not conspiracy theories. These are conspiracy facts.
That's why I wanted to talk with you, because you not only name names, you have dates, you have history, all the footnotes in there that you were present for. So this is, you know, firsthand experience. This isn't just, you know, tossing around all sorts of accusations and trying to say, oh, this happened. This is something that you were there for. I'm one of the guys that actually gave you a good slam in a good way, Greg Pallast. He said, I remember John Perkins. He was a real jerk, a gold-plated, super slick, lying little shill for corporate gangsters, a snake oil salesman with a movie star grin, shiny loafers, a crooked calculator, and a tooled leather briefcase full of high-blown BS. Okay, that was very succinct.
Wendy, with friends like Greg, who needs enemies? They do count Greg as a friend now, but yes, we sat on the opposite side of the aisle in the Seabrook nuclear power plant hearings, and we were adversaries, and that's very... That lady saw me as a chauffeur industry, which I was at the time.
Well, but that's what I wanted to bring up, too, is because when you dealt with these people, they saw you coming, they knew, and they could knew. There was nothing that could stop you. You were so incredibly slick and efficient and effective. You knew your game. At the same time, you also knew that this isn't something you wanted to continue. And in order for you to get this word out, you had to actually do the opposite. And you made the appearances and made your name known through the New Age circles. That's how I found out about you, because I was so just absolutely mesmerized with your story from your experiences with the indigenous cultures in South America. And I thought, this is fantastic. And then there's this dark backstory that you couldn't tell, because why?
Well, so my conscience finally got the better. Let me just start by saying that at the beginning, I thought I was doing something good. I'd been in the Peace Corps for 3 years. I'd lived in the Amazon with indigenous people there after getting out of business school. And I'd lived in the Andes with indigenous people there. I'd been an apprentice to shamans. I'd been inducted into shamanism and so forth. And then when I got out, I went to work for this consulting firm, Charles T. Main, out of Boston, a very prestigious consulting firm. As an economist, I very soon became chief economist and started doing these programs like I mentioned earlier of getting countries to take these loans. I thought at the beginning that was the right thing, because in business school, that's what we were taught, that if you want to help a poor country, invest a lot of money in infrastructure and power plants and industrial parks. And in fact, statistically, we can prove that it does grow the economy. The GDP increases as we do this. And so at the beginning, I thought I was doing the right thing. I was what I trained and educated to do. But over time, probably because I'd been in the Peace Corps, I'd seen the other side, I was able to see that although the statistics show economic growth growing, the statistics are terribly skewed in favor of the very wealthy. So the average people in these countries don't even make the statistics hardly. No, they do. They don't have that much money. And a lot of their shopping is done in local markets or barter.
Go ahead.
So you know, I could see that this was a scam, and yet it was a very legitimatized scam. And at that point, after about 10 years in the business, I decided I needed to get out.
That's, and I saw there was a wonderful article you wrote for Huffington Post where you describe the perceived the perception bridge, objective reality versus perceived reality. And you talk about what in 1976, Milton Friedman won the Nobel Prize in economics. And when he said, among other things, the only responsibility of business is to maximize profits, regardless of the social and environmental impact. That's a huge, that I think is what probably changed your involvement and, you know, the whole thing across the board.
That changed everything. I've been taught in business school that a good CEO is a responsible citizen. Yes, makes a decent rate of return for investors, but also takes good care of his employees, his customers, and the communities where his business works. That was in the late 60s when I was in business school. Friedman's statement and his winning of the Nobel Prize changed everything. It's a monumental moment in the changing of perception. Suddenly, businesses were perceived not as instruments of serving people, the public, making decent rates of return for investors, what we used to call really good stock and blue chip stock. The only job of business is to make huge amounts of money for the primary shareholders. But you know, Wendy, the good news there is that we can change that perception too, and that's what we must do. And that's why I wrote The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, is to really spell out a strategy whereby we need to reverse that and get back into the idea that business is there to serve us, the people. We need to make that happen, and we can make it happen.
What I also wanted to get into was, you know, when the first time you came out with this, you kind of thought that you were, I guess, because you were going public, that might help soften the blow for all these people you were getting ready to expose. And the story behind that, I think, is also very powerful, too, because I think at the time you said you told your daughter that you were going to do this, and her response was, what was it?
Well, yeah, she said, if they get you, Dad, I'll follow in your footsteps. It was very bold. She was in college at the time. Yeah, that gave me a lot of encouragement, really.
Yeah, well, yeah, and not only that, I'm trying to relate the seriousness of this, because the allegations that you put out are, these are major corporations. This isn't some, you know, unknown factor here. This is dynamite. And the fact that you're coming out with it again with more details and more background says it hasn't gone away. Not only has it not gone away, it has increased. And the names of the corporations are bigger and they take more paper.
And they did try to sue me. Bechtel tried to sue me. The Summer Institute of Linguistics tried to sue me. I write in The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman about these things and about how I believe I was poisoned. I ended up spending 2 weeks in a New York hospital. I was supposed to be speaking at the United Nations. I get rushed to a hospital, and in the end, had 70% of my large intestine removed because I'd probably been poisoned. It's a dangerous game out there. There's no question about it. But, you know, I really think that we're turning a corner, and we're moving in a new direction where we're understanding that the old perceived reality, the Milton Friedman adage, is not serving us at all. It's destroying us. The glaciers are melting. The oceans are rising. Hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes are happening at incredibly fast speed. And so we know we must turn this thing around. We must turn what I call a death economy into a life economy. It's a matter of that perception bridge that you mentioned in the Huffington Post article is what it's all about, is that when we change our perception, then that changes the objective reality, which is what the world is made up of.
Okay, we're going to take a break, but I want to come back in the next segment and talk about what you learned. The difference between you and some of these other guys was you actually knew the culture, you knew the language. You weren't at the bar, you know, knocking back Bloody Marys. You were actually just fraternizing. You were getting to know people in the region, and so that's the difference. You had a vested interest. You knew these people as humans, as people who would either benefit or not from these policies, and that made a world of difference, I believe, in the way you approach this and the reason you're coming out with your story and continuing to pound it and say, gotta change. All right, we're talking with John Perkins, author of New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. If you saw the prior book, then you know that this is a bombshell. In the meantime, I also want to bring in some of that stuff that you learned back with the, amazingly enough, the cultures, the people who taught you to see the world a different way and said, hey, take this back. They can use this. All right. This is Wendy's Coffee House on Talk Radio KCMO. You can catch up on the blog, wendyscoffeehouse.com. Back with John Perkins in the next segment. KCMO Talk Radio. This is Wendy's Coffee House. Hi there. Glad to have you along. My guest today, this is serious, okay? We could go into the conspiracy theories, but I get bored with those. I want the real thing. And so I go to the source. I go to the people who've experienced it, who've had real experience and real knowledge and real information that's fact-based. And if you want to go look at the the post-it notes, the footnotes in the book, New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you'll recognize a whole lot of names. And we're going to not drop the names right now. All right, that gets beside the point. But I wanted to talk with John because this is a perfect time to bring this information back to light and say that there are some things happening with corporations worldwide that we can shift and we can change. We don't have to continue doing these kinds of things to our neighbors and our kin on the planet. The thing that I really thought was helpful in that Huffington Post article that you did, the perceived reality versus the objective reality, or objective versus perceived, however you spell it out, it was something that you got from, I think, you know, your time learning the shamanism, the shamanic experiences you had in South America, I think really shaped you. And the fact that you already knew when you were going into some of these places, the people, you were looking for the people. You weren't just looking for a little vacation and a short time out. That, I think, made a world of difference.
It absolutely did, Wendy. You know, having been a Peace Corps volunteer in the Amazon with the Shuar people, I was just there last week. Actually, I go back all the time, and I was there 60 to 71. Had a huge impact on me. My life was saved by a shaman, and he demanded that I become his apprentice, payment to him. It was all about perception. I realized I was dying in the Amazon, and I was dying because I perceived that the foods there, the stuff I was drinking, which is a kind of beer that's made from women chewing and spitting manioc root because they don't drink water out of the rivers because the rivers are filled with organic matter. So you don't do that. But I discovered that food and that drink was actually very healthy. But these were very, very healthy people I was living with. But when I drank or ate it, I perceived it was going to kill me because that's what I've been taught. It's very unhygienic. And so the whole thing of shamanism is about changing perception. And that's, of course, also true of modern psychology. It's also, you know, chaos theory and quantum physics tells us now that everything is about our perceptions, our consciousness, how we observe things. And so what we know now is that there's an objective reality that the microphones we're talking to right now, but what we're talking about is a perceived reality. Culture is a perception. Countries are a perception. Religions are a perception. Corporations are a perception. And when enough people accept that perception or codify the laws, it has a huge impact on objective reality. And what we really know is that in order to change objective reality, we don't like the way the world is today. If we're afraid that too many oceans are rising, too many glaciers are melting, we need to change our perception of how we live on this planet.
Well, and you call it a life, you know, instead of a death vision, a life vision, or that's a way, death economy, life economy. Is that the way you approach it?
Yeah. So what we've really created, and a lot of it came about because of Milton Friedman, is this form of capitalism that I call predatory capitalism that's created a type of an economic system that really is killing itself. It's a death economy. It's based to a large degree on militarization, and it's also based on destroying the resources upon which it depends. It can't keep going. It's consuming itself into extinction. It's done some great things. You know, we got amazing technology. The fact that we can talk to each other across the planet now instantaneously. Incredible art, incredible medicine, incredible science has come out of this, but it's gone too far. And now it's consuming itself into extinction. We need to create a new type of economy, one that is itself a renewable resource. This I call a life economy. And, you know, it's based on paying corporations, paying each other, paying ourselves to clean up terribly polluted oceans and air and earth, and to regenerate devastated environments. New technologies for energy, transportation, communications that recycle, that no longer tear up the earth in order to get resources. There's an amazing opportunity here for a whole new type of economic growth, if you want to call it that, to occur that is going to make the planet more habitable rather than less habitable.
Okay. Well, what I want to go back and address is that this information you're bringing out, it sounds, you know, peace, love, joy, save planet Earth, all that. It sounds in some people's mind that it's completely impossible and it's just a sugar-coated way of viewing the world. And yet, what you are is a whistleblower. And when you started coming back with this approach and saying, okay, these are the companies, these are the corporations, these are the people who are causing problems, and you need to convince them to stop doing business their way. When you first came out with that, and this is before you had the meeting when you mentioned you were poisoned, what was that? A warning to you to cool it, cease and desist, and then you continued. What happened with that? Because this is this is basically a wake up call.
Well, yes, it was a tremendous attempt to silence me. And at the beginning, when I first started doing this back in the early 80s, I decided to write an expose and include other economic hitmen, former economic hitmen, jackals, in the book. I started contacting them. I get anonymous phone calls that threaten my life and that of my infant daughter. And then I was offered a totally legal bribe, to be the president of the big consulting firm, Stone & Webster, which still exists, took me out to dinner. And he said, hey, you got a great resume. You're a chief economist of one of our major rivals. We'd like to use our resume and our proposals. You won't actually have to do much work for us. Maybe take a trip once in a while someplace and have dinner with some people. But you don't have to do much. Just don't write the book. And incidentally, I want to write you a check for $500,000, consultant's retainer. Just don't write the book. So my life is threatened. I'm being offered this phenomenal amount of money to do nothing, basically. What would you do?
Well, I think the fact that there were humans involved and that was, a very... very real threat, I think maybe the money would have probably taken precedence.
Yeah. I mean, I knew the jackals were serious.
You'd seen their work, yeah.
I'd seen their work. They'd kill me. They'd kill my daughter easily. I took the money. And in my own self-defense, I'll say that I didn't buy a big mansion or lots of fancy cars. I invested the money in going back to the Amazon, to the people where I'd been a peace corps volunteer, to really find out what was going on there. Spend more time with them. And I ended up forming a couple of nonprofits, Dream Change and the Pachamama Alliance. You can go to their websites. Go to my website, johnperkins.org, and it'll take you to those. They still exist. They're still going strong, amazing organizations. And writing other books. That's when I wrote the books on shamanism, The World is As You Dream at Shapeshifting, Psychonavigation, 5 books on shamanism. Because that was okay with some websites, but I did not write the book that exposed everything. And then my contract with Stone & Webster ended. I was in the Amazon on 9/11. When I came home, I went to Ground Zero, and as I stood there looking into that smoldering pit, I knew I had to write the book. But this time I decided I wouldn't tell anybody I was writing it. It wouldn't be an expose, including other people's stories. It would just be my own personal confession. I'd write the whole book and then get it in the hands of a very competent New York literary agent and out into the publishing world. And at that point, I thought it would be my best insurance policy because nobody would want to kill me because I would sell books.
Yeah, a martyr always works.
Right.
And that didn't necessarily happen that way. But this is something that I think if you're listening right now, it would do you some good to at least check out the websites and check out some of this information, because really it shifts your viewpoint of how we are as people and humans and how we treat others on our planet. And a whole lot of corporations are involved in this type of activity. It's just mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling. But again, go to John's website, johnperkins.org, and you'll see a lot of information there. But what I liked and what I wanted to focus more on is how you changed your perception and your beliefs when you were introduced to shamanism.
Well, yeah, I'd grown up the son of relatively poor teachers in rural New Hampshire. I spent a lot of time in the woods, and I had a deep admiration for the history of indigenous people in the United States. And my own great-great-great-something grandmother had been captured by Algonquin speaking people, Abnaki people. So I had a little of that blood in me. So when I'm in the Amazon now living with people who are totally hunters and gatherers at that time, I and they get very sick, and shaman cures me through this understanding of a change of perception changes everything. It had a huge impact on me. And then, when I got out, I did what I'd been taught to do in business school, and I actually thought that what I was doing as an economic hitman was to help to change perception in a way that would make objective reality better for poor people. Because that's the load of goods I've been sold in business school and at the World Bank.
Okay, hold on. But we're going to take a quick break because I think you can really sum this up better in this next segment. So we're going to take a quick break. My guest today, John Perkins, The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and we're focusing right now on the world as you dream it, because this is the dynamite. This is the fuel. This is the incentive to say, yes, these things are changeable. We're not stuck with reality that is causing the death economy, as he uses that phrase. Next on Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House, talking with John Perkins. The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It tells what we all can do to turn a death economy into a life economy. Yoko Ono. You might remember that name. You are an extraordinary person because you've taken a lot on your shoulders. But you were, before we went into the break, talking about changing the perception there. Go ahead, I interrupted you.
Yeah, so when I first started doing that work for the World Bank and what they call now economic hitman work, I thought I was doing the right thing. The perception that we were presented with was that by investing in big infrastructure projects in these countries, we'd help all the poorest people. I very quickly thought, well, not very quickly, within a few years, but I saw that that was a false perception, and that the truth was that we were helping a few rich people. And then eventually I got out of doing that, went back to the Amazon, formed these nonprofits, spent the next number of years writing books on indigenous cultures, and then along comes 9/11. It had a huge impact on me, and I knew I had to write the book that exposed the truth of the work I had done. And as time has gone on, what I've really understood so clearly is that the whole idea of shamanism offers us the way out of a death economy, a failed economic system. It isn't serving us any longer. Its time is over. And by changing perceptions, by using those very ideas of shamanism, and which are also the ideas of modern quantum physics and chaos theory and modern psychotherapy, we can change everything. And so that's where I've been devoting myself. And what's fascinating, Wendy, although at the beginning, after Confessions of the Economic Hitman first came out, there was a lot of setbacks. I was sued. The State Department came after me. A lot of things happened, and I won all the cases. A lot of the lawsuits went away, et cetera. Because everything I say is true in the books. People tried to deny it, that I had all the backup information. But also now, more recently, a lot of corporations have hired me, and corporate conferences have hired me to talk, and I'm going to be doing another one for a major executive early in September, giving a speech about this, because so many corporations and corporate executives understand that this system isn't working, and they don't know how to get out of it. I hear over and over from CEOs, hey, I want to create a green legacy. I have grandchildren. I want to make a better world for them, but I'm afraid if I lose half a percentage of market share, I'll lose my job. Maine stockholders will fire me and replace me with someone who only cares about market share. So I need help in to understand how we can change the perception within our own corporation, with our stockholders, and with our customers. And so that's where I'm really devoting my time right now, to understanding that to bring this around, we get to really change the perception of consumers, of executives, stockholders, of all the stakeholders in this whole system.
Well, I think right now what you're doing is turning a huge page and giving people hope and giving people not only that, but assets and information and empowering them with a game plan. We're going to have to let you go, but I really appreciate your time. And if you're listening, johnperkins.org, check it out. And then I also, Dream Change Foundation and the Pachamama Alliance, those are two of your organizations. I think you're doing fantastic work with that too.
Thank you so much, Wendy. And I'd really encourage people to sign up for my newsletter at my website. You can actually put your email in there. And you're doing fantastic work. Keep it up. We need to keep spreading this word. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. All right. So when you are listening to this, go back and do the homework. There's way too much content to actually get all the names and stuff in here, but you will be surprised because it like I said, is a bombshell. And there are reasons that he had threats on his life, because this is very, very hard to listen to, hard to hear, and hard to see the fallout from all of this. So you can check out that HuffPost article to find out more about that, too. I also wanted to encourage you, if you're listening and you want to find out more about the show, wendyscoffeehouse.com. All right. That's the blog site. I will post some of these things about the show and the links to John's website, the links to his information there. New Confessions of Economic Hitman. I saw it the first time around and it was just completely, oh, my gosh. And then the second one came out with more information and more background and more names. And it's just, in a way, you know, mind-boggling to know that the extent of this. And when he said, check out the CIA website, he's right. You know, this is stuff that isn't a secret. So one way or the other, the information is there. You can do your own research. Forget this conspiracy theorist stuff. This is the real thing, the real guy, the real story. And it's all right there spelled out in internet world. Wanted to say one more time, the deal. If you're trying to shift your reality, I've talked about it before very briefly, you can change your perception. You don't have to have a shaman immediately. What you can do is do floating KC. I'm going to say that because there's what happens. Sometimes we can't just meditate and make things go away or have a mind shift. But doing that puts you in a completely different environment, and you can do it with it's actually a float room, not the tank. And so there's no claustrophobia involved. You can go in there, shift your perception, shift reality, think things that you wish to see the world becoming, and they come through. And then you come out with this completely different attitude and a way of saying, well, okay, I can shift my reality. When you see his article and talk, and when he talks about the difference between objective reality versus perceived reality, this is a way to engage that without doing any special, involved, expensive trip anywhere else except into your own mind, your own way of viewing the world. So floating KC will get you about on track to give it a start. Okay, I'm not promising earth-shattering results. I'm just saying take a break, time out, treat yourself. They use it for post-traumatic stress. It's effective, and you might have a little shift yourself. In the meantime, out and about this weekend, check out the balloons. They've changed it. They got music and balloons, and this is rhythmballoons.org for information all weekend long. This is a fun thing to... I've got great pictures from my experiences there, and it's just a fun thing to go to. So Rhythm and Balloons and KCK, find out more about that, rhythmandballoons.org. Whatever you're doing, remember you do have the power to shift your beliefs, to change your mind, to change the world as you do that. And I just wanted to get John Perkins' views in here because he's an extraordinary person. He's taken some major hits, and he's right now coming out on top. If you want to connect with him for your organization or your business to get some insight into how you might shift your own reality into something that promotes life and continuing to enjoy our planet so we don't have to go to that new planet that might be rockier and farther away. This is a good start. Thank you for listening. It's wendyscoffeehouse.com to find out all the details about today's show and the archives. Till next week, stay curious.